Welcome to the story of Millie Salmon and the Infinite Shop. This is Chapter 18, Culmination Summit. Millie made a discovery about the power draining from the shop. Let's see where this takes her. I'm the author, Ray Dubicki, and I'm happy to read this story to you. It's time to meet the big bad. You can join Millie Salmon on Patreon or find more at milliesalmon.com. And you can follow this podcast and other stories on social media at Infinite Shop Limited. Chapter 18, Culmination Summit. Millie blasted into the shop like a flood. Grandpa was on his stool, and Firth was leaning on the counter with an open novel.
Quibby! School barely ended. What's going on?
Grandpa came to put an arm around Millie. She was a flurry of thoughts and words and movement.
There's a problem with me doing the readings from the machine room.
Grandpa started to offer some comfort.
Okay, that's...
But he was cut off by the chime from the shop door. The special chime saying the shop had tethered to a new world.
We can talk about this. We'll find out it's probably something like the old narrow saying, inside a Pertali is a nubbit. But first, we get the pleasant surprise of a new world. Want to see? After all,
he winked at his granddaughter.
If everyone else gets to take you on their fun little excursions, then I'm taking a chance to share a quick glimpse at a new world with you.
He paused for a second, remembering something.
After we make sure the new place is not appallingly dangerous.
Firth had the big binder out from under the desk. He turned to a page that was bright white and crisply printed. This was a brand new page. Nothing jumps out. Easy atmosphere, good weather, general vicinity of a handful of other tethers, nothing much from the engine. Looks like two Vubi in walking distance, ready to enter. Millie watched Grandpa do a quick scan of the shelves of maps and magazines at the front of the counter. Millie didn't realize the titles had changed. This must have switched to the new world as soon as the tether connected. In her rush from school, she didn't have the brain space to look around right now, but it didn't keep her body from feeling the excitement. There was a catch in her throat, and the corners of her chest felt warm. A new world. It was the unknown, and she wasn't afraid. The emerald lawn opened wide before the door. The grass was cut as short as a carpet and colored green as the worst kind of mints on the counter leaving a diner. In the distance was a massive stone manor, countless turrets and windows. It would have been a castle, but it was too big. Layer after layer of columned porches pushed the front closer to them with more steps than a new board game. They poked a foot out to step into this oddity of a city. Grandpa looked around. Millie looked behind and realized it wasn't a city. The door had not connected to a building. There was no building. There was just the door. She looked around the back to find a closed door shut in the frame. Behind the door were two rows of trees lining the lawn into the far distance. This was a massive estate, and they popped up into the middle.
"This is not appropriate. This is not correct," Grandpa said. "The machine should only attach."
The door started to close behind them. Grandpa twisted himself so quickly that Millie worried his socks would unknit. He jammed his foot into the closing gap just in time.
"There's no reason for us to be here. I don't know why the persistence engine would connect to this kind of door in this kind of place."
"Maybe we should ask them."
Two men were coming down the path from the manor house. One was short and walked without bending his knees. His skin was dark as his work apron was light. Spectacles glinted on his face.
He was such a bundle of awkwardness that Millie felt uncomfortable from across the lawn. The other was so stiff and rectangular that he made bricks look positively plush. He exuded the same kind of seriousness, high-cropped hair, jacket that was gold-lined and all ironed creases. He looked like something that could build a wall or break a window.
"Master Pilling," the stone man called across the grassy open spread. "How interesting you decided to show up on my lawn."
He enunciated more than he spoke. Grandpa shuddered with an irritation that Millie had never seen before. She almost was not sure it was irritation. She had never seen Grandpa even slightly displeased with anyone. But this man made Grandpa's teeth grind, which prevented any wasted time replying. Grandpa ushered Millie into the shop and turned to see the two men picking up their pace approaching. From safely inside the door, Grandpa did make one comment.
"We're not your playthings, Listing."
With that, he slammed the door shut and locked it with a key from his large ring. Firth shared Millie's shocked expression from behind the counter, a moment of dust settling past. Grandpa crossed the room and settled into his stool behind the counter, picking up his mug.
"Well, that answers that question. It was this world that's taxing the persistence engine. Not the connection, but the fools on the other end of the line."
He pursed his lips and took a gentle inhale of the smell of coffee.
"We'll speak to your father to make sure this is corrected."
Dad was very upset at the news.
"Listing,"
he growled. He shivered. He grimaced. He slumped. He left his stove full of simmering pots and flopped into the big seat at the table and put his head in his hands. And Tokely was with him. Mom didn't ask. She just said it, following behind Dad and turning off all the burners.
"Are you sure it was Tokely?"
Grandpa nodded.
"I still have Tokely's stool behind the counter here. I'm so sad he wasn't who we hoped."
Millie didn't have to ask who Tokely was.
"That traitor Tokely," Dad said. "You try to pick your friends carefully."
Of course, this left a whole lot of explanation that she did want to ask about.
"Listing is the larger problem," Mom said, "and we should have expected that he was the root of these issues. Literally, he was the first one we had in mind when we kept Millie and you out of the shop, Jules."
"Why don't we ask him what he wants?" Millie asked.
"We know what he wants," Dad seethed. "We've been dealing with him for a long time. He wants to take the library from the shop. He wants a shop for himself and his own crazy. Now he's recruited Tokely to get it for him."
"Tokely probably didn't have to be recruited," Mom added. "He was plenty ready to help. He has been very angry with your father and I for a very long time."
Sensing her parents were not ready to offer much in the way of real explanation, Millie looked to Grandpa to elaborate. He did not, leaving Millie unsure what the issue actually was, so she threw out the same suggestion a different way.
"If these two are willing to go so far to get an attachment to the shop, just give them a door."
"Honey..."
Dad's opening suggested she successfully kicked him into explainer mode.
"We can't do that. Listing was one of the first people who understood the actual power of the persistence engine, and he's been looking to hoard it ever since. You saw his house? He calls it Culmination Summit because it's the end point of all things. He collects them and keeps them in a pile for him to sleep on. We don't do that. We open to everyone. There's a lot of power in just hoarded knowledge,
But there's more in our kind of connection. The library helps us make this network of tethers that gets stronger with every new addition. He just wants to suck the world into a bubble he controls and let all other people plucharf themselves. Millie wanted to suggest that they were not open to everyone, particularly 13-year-old daughters, but wanted to know what the word plucharf meant more. Here, Grandpa did help with explanation, but not definitions.
We only saw a little bit of that planet, Quibby. His estate reaches in all directions, just far enough to hide that the rest of the planet is a wasteland. He's a shriveled version of the little prince, living alone on a rock with his rose under glass.
Millie actually understood that Earthbound reference. It still didn't make complete sense to Millie, so she offered the same idea another way. Is there some way to make him think he has a connection to the shop when he can't actually mess around with it?
Dad remained very quiet for a minute.
Actually, maybe we could do that. We could push a door to Listing's world in the spot where he's trying to tether at the same time. Use our door to pull his door into a loop, one that he would not be able to come through from his side. The persistence engine could be repulsed from his planet by that setup.
That's not what I asked, Millie objected.
That's not what she asked, Mom protested. But Dad was on a roll. Good thinking, Millie. We'll give him exactly what he wants. Just never let him keep it.
He bundled up his apron and dashed down to the machine room faster than anyone else could object. What happened next would be sung at Mini Brentone for years to come. Some would pick apart the reasons why such a perfectly reasonable plan would go so horribly awry. Others searched for the deeper meaning of it all. Siggy usually just retold the story as an excuse to dump buttermilk over somebody. It would be easiest at this point to just discuss what everybody saw. Millie caught up to Dad just as he was coming back out of the machine room.
Go inside and keep an eye on the readings, he ordered over his shoulder, running back downstairs to the front of the shop.
She stood on the landing, looking inside the carefully constructed construct she had used to understand all of the information of the persistence engine. She heard Dad open the door, and she saw the whole machine room flex. The girders bent and snapped back like springs under pressure. The windows rattled. The scenic buildings in the distance parted and wiggled. She stepped in to look at the gauges. All were spiking. She understood this as the persistence engine did not like being told where to put a door. Then they went past spiking and started spinning like helicopter blades. Firth saw Jules run into the shop, then Millie follow, then Grandpa, who only just made it in the door when Jules was back down the steps from the machine room with a key in his hand. He clicked it into the closed door and turned the knob. The shop around Firth popped, like he was inside a fist cracking its knuckles. The racks of maps and books rearranged their print on their faces, and all the straight lines bent and snapped back. Jules opened, then stepped through the door, where both Firth and Grandpa saw the wide expanse of Listing's lawn spread out on the other side. It was a second before the door frame filled with a loud chaos of something. Grandpa would compare it to looking up at the grand fog maelstroms on the plains of Thorzon Twill. These were not actually plains, but incredibly short rainforests whose incredibly tiny stature protected them from the region's incredibly strong winds. Only if you lay down
and put your eyes just above the surface of the ground, could you see the majesty of the rainforest in all its layered biodiversity? Of course, laying down required that you crush hundreds of micro acres of the rainforest, so the local tribes began erecting a special viewing platform. Unfortunately, they used the only material available, very tiny pieces of teak from very tiny trees. Erecting the viewing platform decimated the rainforest, thus proving Heisenberg's uncertainty principle once and for all. Anyway, Firth would compare the doorframe vortex to a flushing toilet. Stoney saw her family leave the apartment in a running parade. She sighed, double-checked the stove was off, picked up both her factor and the mighty blank, then put on her coat before locking the apartment behind her. She did not go to the shop, instead walking across the street to the good coffee shop and ordering a decaf latte. She sat at the cafe table across Barber Avenue from the shop. She didn't need the tablets to tell something big just happened, but opened hers just to see how big. She watched the 12-world average power draw spike as high as it had ever gone. Sitting on the table with its direct link to the shop, the mighty blank went crazy. It stood up on its end, played an ancient Dorian sea chant in four-part harmony, and demanded a pitcher of scotch before melting into a puddle. Stoney poured her cup of coffee on it to stop the smoldering, sad because she didn't have a chance to take a sip. Colonel Weller saw a lot, but he wasn't sure of what. Operating from a mobile command center, his elite team of information warfare soldiers easily cracked into the shop's computer. They wouldn't have been able to. Normally, it would have shown a long list of available sheet music from 17th century Baroque harpsichord conductors. Tokelie's attempts to attach the shop left a tiny window open in the shop's computer security. The very smart and very opportunistic soldiers followed the connections to a very interesting-looking locked room. They digitally opened the lock and snuck their computers in, and they did this at exactly the wrong moment. Rarely had so much power and data and rolled-up space-time coursed through the machine room as it was in this instant. The mobile command center quaked. The pipeline of data streaming into this bunker of computers recreated the machine room inside the bus, without the benefit of someone there to help translate or the machine room's flexible understanding of dimensional reality. The universe's digital readout filled eyeballs, minds, and a very tight bus before it blew the computers to smithereens. The mobile command center peeled open like a banana, and the soldiers stumbled out. Three retired on the spot. Two joined the clergy. Two others survived, but whereabouts listed as unknown. Colonel Weller's place was very known and led directly to another visit to the civilian and military tribunal. Jules saw nothing. Listing saw plenty. Lord Captain Elliot Darles Listing, Primate of all Ensel west of the Great River Boche, Protector of the 12th Riding, Holder of the Eth Signing Pen and Signet Watch, First Sharesman of the Kartal Corporation, and graduate summa cum laude of West T. Highland College University, College University, was drinking his tea nonchalantly on his back porch. He was an unassuming man to the people who were closest to him, provided those people answered the door, kept the house spotless,
and allowed him the nonchalance of his tea-drinking hours at 11 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. It was 40 minutes into his afternoon tea when a delightfully perverse door appeared in the yard. This was the rear yard, where there should not be a door. The door he commissioned Tokely Owls to construct was properly in the middle of the front promenade, where it approached the formal gardens and the house entrance. This new door started as a small twist in the look of the Farklethorn hedge, like heat rising from the hood of a very expensive vehicle, not kept in its appropriate garage on a hot day. It was a rounded vortex for only a second before, with a soundless pop, the swirl sprouted corners and dropped into the field like it had always been there. The door was so plain that a little gold flecked off of Captain Listing's jacket cuffs out of pity. Out of the door stepped a paunchy figure, a man. Captain Listing put his teacup down on its saucer and examined the man with his razor-sharp sight. Even from this distance, the man looked pleased with himself. It was a pleased look that Listing knew. Had the person not been stepping out of a door that just appeared in the middle of his backyard, Listing was sure he could have picked out the features. The hair was fine and light, but receding a little further than it was before. Now, how many years had it been? The straight nose with the plump end, and the clothes of someone who wants to be discounted. And that damn pleased look. Montaigne Pilling wore it all the time. Jules Montaigne wore it now. Standing in the middle of his lawn, stepping from a door that just appeared. The pleased look lasted another second before it was replaced with something quizzical. The sound that wiped the pleased look off Jules' face reached Listing. It was a sound that, for those circles of people not accustomed to the finer things in life, could best be described as a hearty belch. From the open door behind Jules Montaigne, a wall of rushing light amber fluid poured out. For a dozen feet beyond the open threshold, the pressurized substance kept roughly the size and shape of the door before collapsing in a tidal wave and widening across the lawn. It flooded through most of the formal plantings, the patio, and the very expensive fountain with the very expensive marble statue of a very naked woman. The tide lapped up against the bottom step of the doorway under the veranda on which Captain Listing watched these proceedings. He saw Jules Montaigne crawl his way onto the step, gasping out of his quickly filling whitish pond. Later, Millie would calculate that almost 1 million gallons of buttermilk washed out of the door and across Listing's yard, pushing Jules to the very edge of sanity and the doorstep of the person he was trying to sneak up on. By compelling the machine to insert a door so irregularly, Jules triggered a bunch of unused subroutines in the persistence engine's program. Fortunately, the persistence engine was slightly wrong in the little-used program it decided to use, and a very particular exponent was turned into a fraction. Otherwise, the amount of buttermilk would have approached the mass of a planet. Numbers get very big very quickly. For a full 5 minutes, the pressurized torrent continued, making everyone involved very interested in biscuits or a strong bath. And in the middle of that milky smear was a very soaked and oily Professor Jules Salmon. When it was over, Captain Listing sent several of his servants down to wrap Jules in towels and lay some very expensive but disposable
pieces of cloth across the tile so their visitor could come up and join him for tea. While Jules was not necessarily predisposed to this, he decided that now was not the time to argue, but to dry off and drain a whole lot of goop out of his ears, his nose, and a few unmentionable areas. Back in the shop, Grandpa and Firth saw the vortex abate, and then the landscape of Listing's front yard covered in the buttermilk slick. They did not see where Jules may have ended up before the door shut. Millie heard the belch, even in the detached nether space that was the machine room. She tried the door, which had apparently been programmed to lock from the outside when Dad had exited. He decided to lock her in. She thought for a second about rearranging the machine room to understand the door as unlocked, but that would take too long. She flipped her charm bracelet around and squeezed the blue locket. The door unlocked, and she was out and down the stairs. Millie burst out of the shop and on to Barber Avenue. She looked around for a second, trying to understand, when she heard a shout from the cafe nearby. She saw Mom, who called her over. "You look irritated and confused," Mom observed. "Dad locked me in the machine room while he did his whatever." "And?" Mom prompted. "And why is this Earth?" "Should it not be?" Millie tried a small lie. "I saw something in the engine that said we were attached to Listing's planet." Mom leveled a stare at Millie that let the teen know this wasn't time for fabrication. "I programmed something else," Millie admitted. "Where is your program?" Millie pointed to her bracelets. "How did you know?" "You make the same kind of mistakes your father does. You get really interesting outcomes from solving problems in the most complex way possible. But they're still really complex and open to tiny errors." Mom took Millie's hand and moved the bracelet around, looking at each of the six dangling charms. Then she moved her hand back and took Millie's hand in both hers. "If it makes you feel better, you make those mistakes in a completely new way. He never would have come up with this. What else do you know?" Millie opened up, but not with eye contact. "I was trying to tell Grandpa when the shop connected to Listing's world. These connections, the ones made by my programs, are the small aberrations that showed up in the machine room. They were getting closer to the bigger issues because I was getting closer to figuring out it was Listing doing the power draw." "Sounds about the simplest solution to a big, weird problem," Mom said. "So it's probably correct." "So it's a big, complex problem, and you figured it out. You worked through the hard end first." Mom laughed a little at that. "If there's anything your father and you have shown me, it's that complex isn't always wrong." She looked over the charms again. "And it looks like you've done so much right." "Does that mean I can go rescue Dad?" "You're probably the only one." She patted her daughter on the hand and let it go. "But take this. You know what the big red button is for." She handed Millie her special phone. Millie hadn't held this device before. The red button wasn't big and wasn't a button, more of a small covered switch. Thinking through what that meant, it was important but not nuclear because Mom didn't blow things up. She let them blow themselves up.
It needed the system, not a shutdown. The only thing that made sense came to mind. That would be the system-wide alert button, Millie said.
Yup, and you've got every knowledgeable person ready to back you up, if you need it.
Mom nodded to the shop. Go get Dad. Tokely Alls was examining the rebuilt door constructed in the middle of the grand promenade leading to the front of Culmination Summit. Some commotion was happening on the other side of the compound. In his time on this world, Tokely had learned the most important attribute of survival was seeing only what he needed to see. That commotion could be dealt with by listing servants. He was a mechanic of space-time, and he was here for one job, to get listing the Library of the Universe. He built the door as a giant target to pull his machine away from Jules Montaigne and Stony Salvia. He knew they had gotten married and squashed their names together in the preposterous Salmon. It was a pleasantly mechanical compromise, but inelegant. He also knew they had a child. Tokely did not like babies. They were too erratic. People suggested they just wanted to eat and sleep, but so many things could interrupt those human pursuits that he'd rather avoid it altogether. The door was not functioning as he wanted since its initial connection to the engine. His engine. The engine that was stolen from Tokely. In its first full attachment, they got Pilling to come through, looking old and haggard. There was also some younger female that came through with him. Those shop people had a name for Pilling's young assistants. Acolytes? Another preposterous concept, having people sign up to worship the engine. He should be worshipped for building the engine, not the machine itself. Tokely deserved disciples, but he was left as just above a servant for this captain, trying to reclaim a little dignity that was stolen by Jules and Stony Salmon. No, it was not working anymore, Tokely thought as he was back on this side of the portal. Probably burned out a handful of relays when they attached too long. Tokely was thinking of going back to his laboratory in the stables and reviewing the massive circuit complex when the door unexpectedly buzzed. Then it more unexpectedly clicked. He peeked around to the other side to find the door open and a young woman stepping through. It was the young female acolyte that came through the door with Pilling.
You are Tokely, she said after looking him up and down. I am Millie Salmon. Take me to my father now.
Most undesirable. This was not an infant, Tokely thought, looking upward at Millie, who stood a half a head taller than the mechanic. But in this face, he saw that jaw and nose of her Montaigne stock. He saw her Ravenshine hair from her mother, and he saw the intelligent violet eyes that mixed the two together.
Where is Listing? I want to see my dad, Millie repeated.
Oh, I can't do that. It's tea time. Nobody came near Listing during his twice daily tea time unless they were bringing him some more tea. The last tea time disturber was released into the woods behind the estate. Released was too kind a word. Given a head start was more like it.
Then get out of my way. I'm going that direction.
Millie started to walk toward the manor.
Oh, you can't do that. It's tea time.
Tokely ran to pass the girl and tried to stand in her way. She sidestepped him and kept going. He tried to make another stop when all his devices buzzed. It startled Tokely. This was the alert to come see Listing, who was very much supposed to be in the middle of tea time. Millie stopped and looked at the shorter man, covered in buzzing and blinking contraptions.
It looks like you have something important to do, Millie said. Probably important enough
that I'm going to follow you. I don't know what you'll get out of that.
Tokely pressed all the buttons to stop things from alerting him. I have a good idea what the important thing is you are being called to deal with. My father is probably there, too.
Millie resumed her fast walk towards the house.
Catch up, or I'm getting to meet your boss first.
Tokely did not like these Montanes, any of them. Tokely did like himself. Therefore, he mustered enough desire or a strong enough sense of self-preservation to get to listing at or before this youngest of the family line. He ran to catch up to Millie.
Millie tried to not gaze too far outside of what was right ahead of her as they crossed each of the immense rooms inside this castle manor mall thing that was supposed to be someone's house. The entrance room was bigger than the arena downtown. That held thousands of screaming people when they went to a basketball game last year. This place was full of stuff and empty of people, at least people that made their presence known. So it was just her and Tokely moving across each of these echoing vaults with ceilings in the sky and walls almost out of sight. Their footsteps did an echo, just getting lost somewhere far away. Crossing the house was longer than her walk to school. With every step, Millie felt that choice happening again. The one like running out of school, where she could turn back to face a known threat. Her eyes fluttered and she registered little details. This set of steps had a thin edge carved into the front of each tread, worn off where the most feet had landed. That set of doors with mismatched gold and silver doorknobs. However, marching through Listing's palace was not like leaving school. The real threat was ahead of her. And Millie had the full force of everyone she knew, plus at least one parent behind her. She just had to keep moving forward to see what was next. Another doorway, another grand room, the click of a wobbly tile, the glimpse of a person moving behind a row of old books. That's why she kept looking forward. She didn't want to get lost in her thoughts or the house. They finally ascended a third set of stairs into another massive room. This had a far wall covered in arched doors. Millie was running out of words to describe big. Each of the door arches was the size of a car bridge. Under the middle one, on an outside porch, she saw two figures sitting across from each other at a table. She doubled her already quick pace. Tokely breathed hard and broke into a jog to get there ahead of her. They came through the door to see Dad wrapped in a towel with a cup in front of him. The porcelain was dainty, thin, overlapping hands. It was so fine, Millie wondered if it was real fingers of tiny children. The cup steamed, so did Dad, staring arrows directly towards Listing. Now closer to Listing than she had been when the shop first opened onto his lawn, Millie got a good look at this person. Her image of a brick was off. All his features were angular and hard, but did not have the earthy warmth of a brick. This was an old man. His souring pale tone under the dyed dark sculpture of hair. Listing wore layers of gray on black on gray, with lines of gold covering every hem, seam, edge, and corner of his clothes. He was absolutely chiseled end of a rock, but it was the ugliest piece of granite ever thrust from the ground. Listing spoke,
"Fellow Tokely Owls, I think you know Professor Jules Salmon. Who have you brought to tea this evening?"
Dad's eyes had not run out of angry ammunition
as they shifted towards Tokely. Millie felt some of that anger for a second as his stare shifted to her before he registered who she was.
"No," he whispered.
This could have unsteadied Millie, but it didn't. He had his purposes for locking her in the machine room, even if they all sucked. She knew Dad worried about letting Listing know about her, much less her being here.
"I am Millie Salmon, and I'm here to collect my dad and my bookstore."
In many of the stories Millie read, there was a point where someone had to speak with surety or authority that covered up how terrified they were inside. Millie had walked the terrified away. All of the things about this enormous mansion were supposed to be imposing. All of the parts of the legend of this Lord Captain Listing were supposed to intimidate. But now he was real, and Millie didn't feel like being scared of the real. She sat down, uninvited, and poured herself a cup of tea. It was pretty tasty, and would have been really good iced with some boba and milk. She sat back in her chair and faced Listing, whose eyebrows were arched, making his forehead a ribbed washboard. Tokely looked ready to turn inside out. Dad's quivering anger started to ease. Collecting his formality, Listing said, "I know who you are, Miss Millie Salmon, and I know you are the child of Professor Salmon here, and I have met your good doctor mother. If you're from that line of parentage and smart enough to get here on your own, then you know perfectly well that you do not have a mere bookstore. You have the library of the universe at your hands, and you are trying to sell it." Millie sipped her tea.
"We wouldn't sell the bookstore."
"Not all at once, but piece by piece, book by book, song by song. And you use the little bits and bitties you receive to expand and consume. You call it tethering, attachment. But it is really just stringing together people that agree with you into a widening, interdependent circle."
"What's wrong with a circle?"
"They're always closed to the outside. To get in, you must be invited, consumed."
"We don't keep anyone out."
As she said it, she knew Listing saw himself on the outside of the circle. "I think you know that is not the truth," he said. Millie didn't just know, she understood it inherently. She had been on the outside of the circle of people who knew about the shop and all it included. While completely surrounded by them, that still stung.
"You opened the shop on this planet. Why do you want to be in the circle so badly?"
"Your circle is meaningless," Listing cooed. "The library is all that matters."
"Don't try and steal it. Come talk to us."
Tokely piped up. "We're not thieves. We're not stealing something. If anything, you took the machine." He pointed a thick finger at Dad. Dad had a one-word reply. "Traitor!" Tokely shot back. "Don't lie in front of your daughter!" Two sets of hands landed hard on the table from opposite sides. Dad was actually putting those angry eyes into forward movement, and Tokely looked like he would catch him midair over the center of the table.
"Enough!"
Listing stopped being proper and enunciated. For a second, Millie saw Listing as the leader of troops he had once been, all the force of voice to move massive armies, and he had not moved or put down his teacup. Tokely and Dad backed from the table. Still, they kept their angry gazes locked. Listing's attention turned back to Millie.
"I do not have to justify my actions to a child."
"Yeah, you do. Because I can take that door."
She pointed at the door at the edge of a row of hedges and a very large pool of slowly curdling buttermilk. It disappeared.
And I can put it here.
Her finger turned to the wall of the massive balcony. There was a thud, not as loud as the one when the shop came in sideways and attached at the market, but similar. It rattled the long line of glass arches. A new door appeared between two of them. When she did it, Millie saw all eyes follow her pointing finger. None of them were looking at her clicking the charms on her wrist. A little skill at misdirection, she learned drawing with two hands.
"You have my attention, Miss Salmon."
Millie had ideas on how to stick it to Listing and rescue Dad when she came through the door and met Tokely. She liked Dad's loop idea, knotting off the tether any way possible. It gave her the thought that if she could get Tokely and Listing inside the door, then knot the tether, they could actually be trapped in a loop. She almost told Listing that she was here to bargain and see if he fell for the Doctor Strange trap. But looking around Listing's empire gave her a completely unexpected feeling. Fear was no surprise. Awe was not a shock. She didn't expect pity. Sagging floors, bad repairs, the image of big but broken and empty. She felt sorry for Listing. Then she felt irritated he was such a pain in the butt. Of all the things, it made her remember how she had thought Dad had been an out-of-work pain in the butt. Unemployed for too long, left to play at home with Evan and do neighborhood stuff, in reality, Dad had access to an interdimensional elevator and chose to hide from this withered old man.
"Captain Listing, my parents have told me that sometimes you have to change the rules of the game. I'm here to do that. You and them have made up this game where one of you has to win and the other has to lose. It's a dumb game. You're wrecking each other going back and forth."
Listing's laugh sounded like a creaking hinge.
"If you look around, there is little impact to my well-being by drawing the library to me."
Millie didn't intend to give Listing a full eye roll, but he got it. She realized she had done it when Dad gave a little snort laugh. Regardless, Millie pressed her point.
"Really? I'm going to shut down your power grid that made the huge draw to get the door here."
She wasn't sure if she could do it, at least not quietly. She knew someone believed she could do it when she heard Tokely give a little gasp and say, "Please do not." Millie addressed the mechanic.
"Do you want to tell him how much he's spending to draw the shop here?"
"No."
"Then how about you tell your boss what's left after he gets what he wants?"
Listing did not look amused.
"What is it you need to tell me, fellow Tokely Alls?"
Tokely looked anywhere but towards Listing.
"We need further resources to maintain a library after a firm connection is made."
"All my fortune and resources are readily available to you."
Tokely sniffed hard through his flat little nose.
"I do not know I was told to work on the door. You have many other representatives working on finances and maintenance of your fortune. I was told what to do and submitted the forms."
He said it in one breath, without spaces between words. That was enough of a non-answer that Listing understood what was going on. Millie watched his impeccable control waver over the realization that whatever little battle he was waging against the Salmons was destroying his fortune and future. He was so focused on the door and the library that he didn't notice his mansion falling apart. You show flashes of adult understanding, Miss Salmon. Please tell me how you see the rules of this battle changing. From what I saw in the machine room, I think we were both spending a lot of energy fighting putting a door here. Do you want a connection to the shop?
No, Listing said firmly. I want the library. A bookstore is not a library, because a library is not for sale. My interest is not the victim of style like a bookseller. I want a library that is comprehensive and authoritative. A library exists outside of time, not inside a wallet.
Dad took that comment personally. We're not some evil conspiracy to sell the universe's knowledge back to itself. Even libraries have budgets, and we're spreading truth wider than anything that's ever been done before.
Again, only inside your circle. You may think you're open-minded, that you get to chant about not being evil, but you leave a trail of slime like you did on my lawn.
Dad shot back up to stand. Libraries do not exist in spite of the people who use them. Dad was getting heated. Connecting to people is not slime. People make paths through. But the slime comment caught Millie differently. Dad, stop for a second. She turned to Listing. Are you going to actually read the books you get in the library?
It's a library. Why would you touch such a collection? You read the books in the reading parlor.
Dad flopped down in the chair with such an exasperation that the little teacups of child fingers startled and let go, dumping all the tea into the saucers. I don't even have words anymore. Whether that applied to the tableware or the library was unclear. Millie considered the parts of the persistence engine. You know we do not have originals. We have copies.
Yes, Listing said. Tokely has made me aware of the way your machine works.
Tokely winced at suggesting the machine belonged to the Salmons instead of him.
My library is to be crisp and new, not pretending to be aged, but always truly kept up to date.
Kept up to date, rewriting books that are changed or just add new books? Listing had to think about this.
Only add new books. Do not take anything from here or erase the records.
Millie turned to Dad. He looked like any energy left after surfing across the yard on a torrent of dairy had exited and left him hollow. Millie tried to engage him. We can do that with a one-way connection from the shop to here. They'll use a lot less energy to just have the library and a print head. She could see that many of the things he had been fighting for so long had ended up not being things to fight, or at least not the monsters he was set up to fight. She tried again. Dad, what do they need for just a library? He rolled his head a bit, looked at Millie, and pulled his lips thin. Looking across the table, he saw Listing and Tokely like he never had before. You're going to need a lot more space. We would have to fold the library so it can fit without bumping into your neighbors.
I control this continent and have license over the remainder of the world.
Planetary neighbors.
There are not that many books.
I assure you there are. Listing turned to Tokely for certification. The mechanic nodded. Millie liked the expression of surprise that Listing showed. He recombobulated himself and asked,
This folding, you call it, does it damage the books?
Not in the least, Dad said. Another assent from Tokely and Listing approved. Dad had a last thought. We don't have a throttled tether. By keeping you up to date,
We don't control the torrent that's coming at you.
Like your milk door experience, Listing prodded.
Dad was unimpressed at the dig, but continued.
It will only be a library. It cannot be a shop. You won't connect to anyone but us, and we will be able to see the contents of your connection.
Is this an attempt to bargain that I will not start a competing store?
If so, you have my word.
I wish we would run into the same energy draw that got us here in the first place, but likely escalating into an existence-ending kaboom.
Millie laughed. Does a shop make a kaboom if there's no one existing to hear it?
The adults turned to Millie.
Flashes of adult understanding, Miss Salmon. I do not want anything interfering with my books, but I will not end existence to do so.
Millie and a very damp and sticky Jules re-entered the shop to find Mom waiting with Grandpa. Firth took their safe return as his cue to say goodnight, comforted that Millie had things under control.
"He's going to leave us alone?" Mom asked.
"Yes, with a small trade." Dad told Mom about the deal Millie brokered. She nodded her approval.
"Of all the rules in the universe you had permission to break, you decided on ours. Well done."
This was Millie Salmon and the Infinite Shop, Chapter 18, Culmination Summit. In the next episode, let's wrap up this Millie Salmon story. Thank you for listening. You can find more about Millie at milliesalmon.com or join us on Patreon. Please like, subscribe, and leave a review on whichever podcast app you use. Millie Salmon and the Infinite Shop is a production of Infinite Shop Limited, which you can follow on all social media platforms. I'm Ray Dubicki. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to reading some more for you soon.